Our democracy is hanging by a thread, but we know it's not about just winning and losing each battle. It's about persistence and building resilience.
That's why we're launching the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
If you're looking for ways to get engaged or just for ways to stay sane, we want to help you navigate what comes next.
It's an exciting collaboration with political dynamo Jess Craven, author of the Chop Wood, Carry Water newsletter,
and grassroots activist Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast.
Every week on the Practivist Pod, we're going to have important conversations with changemakers, give you practical ways to make an impact, have some fun, and inspire hope.
This is more than a podcast. It's a place for our community to grow our practice of advocacy for justice, equity, and progress.
Action is the best antidote for anxiety. So subscribe to the Practivist Pod today.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
My goal in this deposition was to be truthful, but not particularly helpful.
Welcome to Unspun, the podcast that makes you better at finding the truth. The way people get news is changing. It used to be that there were many reporters who would research stories and write articles, but now politicians and famous people share information directly with you on social media and the internet. That means you find out things fast, but it's up to you to make sure the information's actually accurate. And newsmakers don't always do their part. The temptation to manipulate information is strong. They bend the truth to deceive so that they can avoid accountability, so that they can advance their agendas. When you recognize these agendas, you can sometimes find out what's real. And we're at a crossroads where anyone can share anything online, so it's important to sharpen your critical thinking skills. Finding that deception before it goes viral is pretty much a survival skill now, and we're going to do it together. Let's get unspun. Hello, truth seekers, and welcome to this week's episode of Unspun. Last week, Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos changed the paper's editorial policy to one that focuses on free markets and personal liberties. And this sent something of a shockwave through journalism. His opinion page editor quit, and there were quite many breathless think pieces and blue sky threads criticizing it. Was it such a bad thing, though? This week, I want to dig into the nature of news, and in particular, the differences between news, commentary, and editorials. We'll talk about what each is, how to identify what you're hearing, and even a little bit about how you can create opinion pieces for media outlets and why you might want to. Sound good? Let's get unspun. So I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We live in a really confusing information environment. The structures that were built around news that people learned about in school have kind of disappeared. Like, you used to be able to expect that everyone played by the same rules, but now you might have a checkers game played on the pitcher's mound and someone taking penalty kicks over at third base. Even just categorizing media has gotten very, very confusing, and it's not just for you, but for researchers too. And that creates some unhelpful outcomes. Media critics will tell you that a particular outlet is now bad because of a decision they made once, but it may be because they aren't even trying to do the same thing, like getting mad at a chicken because it doesn't moo. Let's start with the decision at the Post. Now, I'm trained as an old-school journalist, and so I really want to see what happened there as a bad thing. When I was in school, I learned that the content function of a news organization, which we called editorial, was supported by the business side, but that the business side never, ever got to tell editorial what to do. But let me tell you, when I got out and started working, I lost that notion pretty fast. For example, in my first job, I did a feature story on what are called lemon laws. These are laws that say if you buy a used car and you find within a short period of time that it's got mechanical issues, the seller has to take it back and give you a refund. There wasn't anything wrong with the story that I wrote, but some local used car dealers got upset and called the publisher. The business writer, who was not me, was assigned to write a news story about how ethical our local car dealers were. Because, you see, local car dealers bought a lot of ads, and the newspaper couldn't afford to lose their business. Now, a critical thinker that you are, you've probably thought, yeah, that's one story, but that's different from an entire editorial policy. And you're not wrong. But I can see a way that that announcement from the Post is maybe not such a bad thing. Here's why. American journalism has this non-bias norm that implies that you should give space to views that are relevant, even when the journalist personally disagrees. And this shows up in editorial pages when they try to include diverse opinions in columns and in their op-eds. But it's not that way everywhere. In a lot of countries, you have expressly ideological press, where information comes with a known viewpoint. So you watch the conservative channel or read the conservative newspaper or the progressive one, and you know what you're getting because they state it openly. If you want multiple perspectives, then you watch multiple channels or you read more sources. The way we're set up in the US, though, it's up to you, the audience, to determine if there's bias. Now, ideally, the news came with a reasonable effort to remove it, but honestly, if humans are involved in making news, that news has bias. So I'm a journalist trained in the US tradition, and I'm a citizen who values free expression, so I'm not wild about the policy change. But as an educator who tries to teach people to see bias, I can see potential. Because if you have an open bias, it's a great comparison set for other opinion. You know, you can use this to know more about the news that you see. All right, let's talk about the differences between news, commentary, and editorials, because this is where I think things can get confusing. In print news, often these are labeled physically differently, like with the word editorial printed right on the page above the content. But, you know, think about other places where people get news. You know, there's cable channels like the Cable News Network or Fox News, and they host Anderson Cooper or Jeanine Pirro. Or maybe it's a podcast like The Megyn Kelly Show, which one podcast aggregator calls news commentary and another calls news. That's confusing. And what's the difference anyway? Well, let's start with some definitions. News stories try to report factually about issues or events. They tell you who, what, where, and when, sometimes how. And they're often very current, right? They're about the things that are happening now. Editorials are written from the point of view of an institution like a New York Times or a CNN, and often they will summarize an issue drawing from the news reporting of that same organization, and then they'll evaluate the facts and draw a conclusion. A kind of a well-known example is endorsing candidates. A news organization might interview or give questionnaires to several candidates. They'll develop criteria for who would be the most effective in office, and then they'll write an editorial that gives evidence and makes an argument for who would be the most effective in the position. News commentary, or what are sometimes called opinion pieces, try to persuade the audience that a particular point of view on an issue or event is the correct one. They tend to use a larger variety of kinds of evidence, including logic or maybe moral statements in addition to facts. Columns by regulars for the organization, op-eds submitted from the outside and reviewed by the editorial department editors, and letters to the editor are all examples of news commentary. And so are most of the evening shows on cable networks with news in their name. A Sean Hannity or a Chris Hayes, they are providing news commentary. News is in there, but it comes with a heavy dose of what you should think about it. Now, before we go on, let's play a little game. I have three examples for you. One of news, one of an editorial, and one of news commentary, and let's see if you can tell which is which. To make it easier, I have three different sources with different accents. One is print, and the publication provides an AI-voiced audio version. A second is from the UK, and the third is from Australia, so the accents will be different. But all three are on the same subject, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's recent visit with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance at the White House. Here's the first clip.
The issue is that Russia is not losing this war at this state of the game. And in order to negotiate some kind of end to this war, both sides have to cede some ground somewhere. And Zelensky, for obvious reasons, morally doesn't want to do that. He wants it to come with entry to NATO, etc. He doesn't want to hand land over to Russia. Morally, you can understand why that would be the case. But if there are not concessions on both ends, there will not be an end to this war.
Okay, so that was Caleb Bond from Australia. Do you think that was news, editorial, or news commentary? Hold on for the answer, because here's the next clip.
Donald Trump sounded more like Don Corleone than an American president on Friday as he publicly sought to browbeat Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky into accepting a ceasefire deal with Russia. "Without us, you don't have any cards," he said before cameras in the Oval Office. After the meeting devolved into recriminations and ended in acrimony, Trump suggested on social media that the United States would cut off Ukraine until Zelensky offered more concessions, because he feels our involvement gives him a big advantage in negotiations. "Treating allies less kindly than adversaries reflects naivete about the threat a revanchist Russia poses to the Western world, including NATO. Zelensky does want to end the 3-year war that has ravaged his country, but he is clear-eyed that a bad deal is worse than no deal because he knows that, absent ironclad security guarantees from Ukraine's allies, Russian President Vladimir Putin cannot be trusted to uphold a ceasefire. Trump sees himself as a mediator between Russia.
So that was the AI version of a print piece. Was it a news piece, a news commentary, or an editorial? Here's the next one.
President Zelensky met Donald Trump today for the first time since the U.S. president began unilateral negotiations with Russia earlier this month, and it didn't go well. Ukraine and Europe have so far been excluded from these negotiations, but Mr. Zelensky and Mr. Trump had been expected to sign an agreement giving the United States access to Ukraine's mineral and energy resources. Instead, the encounter descended into a bad-tempered shouting match between the two men in front of the world's media, with the Vice President, J.D. Vance, noisily chipping in. We're playing an extended extract of this unprecedented...
That was Julian Marsh with the BBC. Was he hosting news commentary, giving an official opinion in an editorial, or was he presenting the news? All right, the answers. The AI clip? That was the editorial. So expressing an official opinion from the Washington Post, and interestingly, not about personal liberty or free markets. The Australian clip was from a news commentary show called The Sunday Showdown, and that means that the BBC clip was the actual news. I need to take a quick break, but when I come back, we'll talk about how content becomes news, commentary, or editorials, and about how you might be able to use your voice in news commentary. Be right back. Welcome back. You know, it can be hard to tell the difference between news and commentary, and if you find it hard, you're not alone. Although the Media Insight Project did a study that showed that most journalists believe that clearly marking news reporting...
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Commentary or opinion is essential for gaining public trust. Other researchers have estimated that only 41% of publishers label their articles. And among those who do, they're not even consistent. And the news isn't great for the audience either. If you read the news from social media, you likely don't have context between news and opinion. If you go to an online news site, it can be hard to tell what's opinion depending on how you look at it, for example, on what device. So, audiences find that they're often on their own. And it gets even more confusing when the news and opinion are on the same topics, like the examples you heard with Zelensky in the White House. When that happens, research suggests that a listener judges a piece based on how similar it is to already known instances of something like a news article or an editorial. And that gets tricky because news articles are changing. On the side of the media, there are several areas that get considered. On previous episodes, I've covered the idea of news values, right? Those inherent qualities that information has, like conflict or a big impact, that help to determine what news gets covered. For opinion pieces, it can be different. Although news organizations claim independence, at least in the US, there can be editorial stances that a publication has. And that's not always a conflict. Consider, for example, a TV station might have an editorial stance that keeping the town where the station is strong is a primary concern. In that case, if a new company wanted to build a new megastore in town and the station was presenting an opinion piece from its perspective, you know, an editorial, it might weigh losing local businesses that are a part of the town's history. So what criteria do journalists and editors use to classify content as news, commentary, or editorial? They can be broadly categorized into journalistic and commercial news values and some consideration of editorial worthiness. So, like I said, there are news values which are used in journalism to ensure some objectivity when you're making news content. And these values help rank the day's main facts, and they kind of provide a set of working rules. Having information first or having it exclusively can also be a news value. There are also commercial factors. The more resources it costs to cover a story, the less likely it is to become news. And if PR folks present information in a way that easily adapts to the format of the news, it's more likely to become news. So, for example, some PR firms will create things called video news releases, which are little drop-in packages about their clients that TV stations do actually broadcast in the news sometimes. And as I said, if it's proprietary and the journalist is able to present it as just their own work, it's more likely to become news. But for editorials, it's a different set of criteria. Editorial values are elements that you can figure out from looking at the piece itself. For example, it might have language that feels opinionated, or it might make assumptions and then conclusions from those assumptions. It might use language that's hypothetical, right? It might describe things that might happen or could happen, or if this happened, this would happen. Other criteria you would not be able to tell from just hearing or reading the content. Editorial worthiness is more concerned with the editorial policies of a paper than the interests of its readers. And it can include arrangements and partnerships. So for example, Sinclair is a company that owns a lot of TV stations in the US. Sinclair centrally distributes words for editorial comments that it forces anchors on stations that it owns to read. And in places with state-owned media, you can expect that your points in Pravda are going to agree with the Kremlin's perspectives, for example. And some people have speculated that the new Washington Post policy is to get government favor for other businesses owned by Jeff Bezos, like Amazon and Blue Origin. Although this is not really confirmed information, this is just speculation. The way that information gets verified is also different. In news stories, verification involves reporters verifying information from sources, reporting objectively on things they know to be true, separating the facts from opinions, and then sharing how the information was obtained. Editors vet the information and they pick the stories that get shared. So for news, fact-checking tries to confirm that the information is accurate and complete, and when stories go through a reporter and one or more editors, this also helps to ensure that it's objective. In commentaries and editorials, the goal is different. It's not to present facts, but to present opinions and aim to persuade readers. So verification here means making sure that the premises and the evidence that support the opinions are valid. The focus is less on eliminating bias and more on making sure the arguments are sound and logically consistent. One group that helps to do that can be an editorial board. So an editorial board is a group of people in a news organization that plays a central role in shaping the content and direction of editorials in particular. And these boards often hold regular meetings to discuss and define the editorial sort of through line of the newspaper. These meetings can involve editors, editorial writers, columnists, cartoonists, sometimes other important people in the newsroom or even in the community. And some of their job includes preserving and presenting the official position of a newspaper on issues that are important to their public, which can reflect the opinions of the newspaper's editors or sometimes their owners. Sometimes it's just a particular value, like we will always present diverse opinions. The editorial board also helps to pick the topics for specific editorials. It's influenced by a lot of things, like how important recent events are and also what the audience expects. Editorial boards ensure that the opinions presented in editorials stay consistent over time, and this consistency helps to give the newspaper a public identity. This is all harder because the boundary between news and opinion has become increasingly fuzzy. Reporters and news organizations often find themselves walking a really fine line between objective reporting and expressing personal perspectives or institutional perspectives. And this blurring happens in subtle ways that can be kind of easy to miss for the audience. News platforms sometimes use editorials to subtly push their own agendas. You know, they appeal to powerful institutions like the government, or they defend their own economic or ideological interests, like running an article about cars. For instance, a newspaper might craft an editorial that looks like a balanced report, but it actually steers readers towards a particular viewpoint about a complex issue. But, you know, if it's labeled opinion, you could argue that the public has been warned that it is opinion and they should maybe take that with a grain of salt. Now, the way news is produced contributes to this problem because reporters are trained to make unexpected events feel familiar. So turning dry news facts into really engaging stories can inadvertently kind of shape how people understand the information. And this kind of creates this media landscape where the audience has to become increasingly sophisticated, right? They have to learn to read between the lines. And this matters, because different kinds of content affect the public differently. News, commentary, and editorials do different jobs. Each one is a different approach to sharing information and interpretation. So, you know, news primarily tries to give facts about what's going on. Although journalists do usually select and frame their stories based on, you know, rules, just being covered at all affects what the public thinks. Imagine, if you held a protest at the Capitol, for example, how important the issue you are protesting seems to be is going to depend on if cameras were there. If the media doesn't cover the protest, nobody knows about it. So sometimes organizers or even individuals might adjust the way that they express their opinions in order to get media coverage. Here's an example. At protests in Portland, Oregon, in the United States, they had a line of women called the Wall of Moms protesting over police brutality after the death of George Floyd. And that Wall of Moms actually stood up in front of the line of protesters, in between the protesters and the police. It seemed kind of weird. They didn't look like typical protesters, and that was the thing that drew the cameras. The news coverage helped to shape the reality. Now, commentary, on the other hand, can offer a platform to diverse points of view, because commentary doesn't hide the viewpoints. And so this can be used to help build empathy in people who read the commentary and are swayed to agree, but it can also build anger in people who read it and don't. So for example, in the US right now, there's a growing number of commentary pieces about federal workers who are under fire in Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency purges of bureaucrats. Some of these stories tell firsthand stories of workers, which build support through empathy. Others tell number stories of money that's saved from waste, which builds support in a different way. To an extent, when news organizations choose which commentary to platform, it changes what people think. Editorials give that institutional perspective, and that can also really matter. You know, getting an endorsement from a large media outlet can be a changemaker for a politician. And there's some evidence that editorials can be effective at changing public opinion and encouraging people to talk to each other about politics. So each forum does kind of its own job, and it operates within a really complex kind of communication ecosystem. But it's also an ecosystem that is changing because the platforms and the technologies are changing. In kind of the world of digital media, the traditional boundaries between news, commentary, and editorials have become fluid. Digital platforms have fundamentally changed how people access information. And news organizations now have to work in this hyper-competitive environment where multiple voices, including ordinary social media users, bloggers, niche media outlets, they are all competing for the attention of a really overwhelmed audience. And outlets that are objective and impartial can seem boring, and they can lose that competition. So you're seeing news just become more sensational and less objective, even in actual factual news reporting. Now that said, I think there could be some opportunities as well. So for news organizations, if they're clear about their values, their sort of established brands could make it a marketing point that they do have more objective information. Maybe. Thus far, it seems to me like the pressure has worked in the opposite direction, but I do think that is a possibility. The second opportunity is for you, truth seekers, because established news organizations do still choose some opinions to republish. And what they share tends to be more influential than just posting on social media or writing a blog post. Many of them do take submissions from the public to consider to publish, and this is something that you can do. I'm going to put a link to a post I have on how to do this in the show notes, but here's some basics. What we're talking about is submitting what we call an op-ed. And an op-ed is usually around 750 words. And it can be shorter, and often shorter is more powerful. It has both a clear topic and a clear angle. So the topic, that's what you're writing about, and the angle is what you want the reader to think when you're finished. And although they're written to express an opinion, that opinion really needs to be supported by adequate facts. And those facts need sources, and they can be traditional library sources, they can be other sources that you found online. They can also be interviews with important people or even data you collect yourself. But they're the best when you have a clear idea of your audience. So you'd have to think about the news outlet and ask yourself, you know, who am I trying to persuade? What do they already think about this issue? Or what do they already know about this issue? Is it already familiar to them? And then what kind of evidence will convince them? When it comes to formatting it, it includes an introduction, which is where you hook the reader into wanting to find out more about what you think. Maybe give a surprising fact or a stat or something like that. But the trick is to make the reader want more. And then in the introduction, you also state your view on your topic here. And then you have three or four support paragraphs that kind of give evidence for your point. After that, it's important to recognize other viewpoints different from yours and give evidence of why yours is better before you wrap it all up. For any news organization that takes these, there should be a link on their website to some kind of opinion section, and the directions for submitting should be there. It's worth a try, and I hope you'll let me know if you do. I'm Dr. Sturge on Blue Sky or Dr. Sturgeol on Instagram, and I'd love to hear about it. Stay sharp, truth seekers. Thanks for getting Unspun with me this week. Unspun is a production of me, Amanda Sturgeol, and is a proud member of the MSW Media family of podcasts. Send me your thoughts and ideas about trickery in the news on Gmail at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. I even write back. And find this episode's show notes and more information at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. Want to learn more and get smarter? Check out my book, Detecting Deception, Tools to Fight Fake News, which is available on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. And until next time, stay sharp, everyone.
Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyo from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-Roe anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.